Blog Talk Radio.
Friday, everybody. Welcome to the Michael Cutler Hour. I am your host, Michael Cutler. It is always great to join you at the end of the week so that we can play this game of catch-up. Even if you are listening to this program via podcast, the date of this broadcast is April 15th, and it's a very significant day. I know traditionally we think about it in terms of tax day, but today marks a somber anniversary. 3 years ago, April the 15th, 2013, two individuals who came to this country from Russia, the Tsarnaev brothers, launched a vicious, deadly, horrific terrorist attack on the Boston Marathon on the day that in Boston is referred to as Patriots Day. One of those aliens in question became a naturalized United States citizen. His brother had a green card and applied for citizenship. And yet, the oath that Jokhar Tsarnaev, the younger of the two brothers, took certainly was meaningless to him. He mocked it when he engaged in that terror attack that killed and maimed so many people in that horrible attack. And I want to talk about that today, but there's much to talk about. Those of you who are familiar with me know that I'm a retired senior special agent with the former Immigration and Naturalization Service, the INS. That mission supposedly was taken over by ICE, Immigration and Customs Enforcement, another agency, Customs and Border Protection, yet another agency, United States Citizenship and Immigration Services. But in reality, in my judgment, the Bush administration intentionally cut the agency into little components to hobble any efforts at immigration enforcement. It was part of a push for globalism. And the Obama administration has done things that I consider unspeakable, and this isn't about xenophobia on my part, but common sense. You know, there's a world of difference between aliens who come to America legally and those who come illegally. It is the difference between the house guest and the burglar. People invited into our homes who behave themselves simply want to join with us for a celebration or to spend time or that sort of thing. Always welcome, always welcome. But when people break into your home and try to steal your valuables or hurt you or your family, they aren't house guests. And when people enter our country by evading the inspections process designed to keep out terrorists and criminals and aliens with dangerous diseases and so forth, these aren't immigrants. And yet the politicians insist on calling them immigrants. So we're going to look into a lot of that this evening. I'm glad you're joining me. If you're familiar with me, you know that I have a personal website, michaelcutler.net. Please go visit it. I also, for years, have been working with an organization known as Californians for Population Stabilization. Boy, what a mouthful. CAPSWeb.org is their website, C-A-P-S. And in fact, they've just embarked as part of their continuing efforts to call attention to the impact of immigration on California and running a series of radio ads. And the purpose of the ads is to highlight the harm being done by uncontrolled immigration. There is chaos in the immigration system, and it is yet another example of a government system not living up to the reasons for which it should exist, to look out for the best interests of America and Americans. Nothing could be further from the truth, and the lies just keep on coming, and the lies are coming from both political parties. I call them the repugnant cans and the Democrats. They know better. This is not by accident. There's too much money to be had by favoring open borders, by slashing the wages of Americans and displacing them. You look at the problem we have with narcotics. Heroin is not produced in America. It comes into the country by being smuggled. So every gram of heroin present in the United States, every gram of cocaine present in the United States, provides irrefutable evidence of a failure of border security. And the demand for heroin is so high that, in point of fact, schools around the country, including the New York City school system, has now provided Narcan, the antidote to heroin overdoses, to nurses of public schools. Can you imagine? Public school nurses are now being given training and the actual substance, Narcan, to treat people, children suffering from heroin overdoses. With this huge demand for heroin, you would think supply and demand, the price of heroin should be somewhere past the orbit of the moon. And in reality, it's never been cheaper. It has been written in the Washington Post, in fact, reported in the Washington Post last year, that the price of a bag of heroin is less than the cost of a pack of cigarettes. The only way price of heroin can drop to that record low level while the demand is at record high levels is for there to be a virtually unlimited supply of heroin pouring into the United States, and that can only happen through failures of border security. And that's exactly what we have. And it's not just coming across the Mexican border, let me assure you. Heroin and cocaine and God knows what else are all pouring into America. Yes, of course, across the Mexican border. No argument. But it's coming in through our 328 ports and vehicles and cargo. It's coming in on the ships. It's coming in across the northern border. We are being inundated with that poison. People are dying. Children's lives are being ruined. It funds terrorism, the proceeds. The proceeds fund gang activities. Most violent crime has a direct or indirect link to the use of drugs or the trafficking in drugs. And we're being told this is just honky-dory. This is just fine. Nothing to see here, folks. Just keep on moving. Don't pay attention to the guy behind the curtain pulling the strings. Lunacy. We're told that the solution to gun violence is to count how many bullets law-abiding citizens can put in their guns. I got to tell you, it startles me. Startles me that anyone could be that naive. I mean, do you think bank robbers, crazy people, or terrorists are counting how many bullets they're putting in their illegal handguns or rifles or anything else for that matter? If you really want to go after the violent crime and the guns and the deaths of Americans and others, go after the gangs, go after the narcotics. But let me tell you, that's not going to happen because too much money is being made all the way around. It funds the banking industry. It's funding Wall Street and real estate and high-end auto sales and high-end jewelry sales, heroin, cocaine, all those poisons. It's the cash cow. It's the cash cow. And then people say, well, you know, you need to be compassionate and let the foreign workers come in, so they can be exploited, so we can drive down the wages of American workers and deprive Americans of jobs, so we have record numbers of Americans living below the poverty line, and the Labor Department cranks out those rosy numbers. Oh, we have an unemployment rate of 5% if we ignore the tens of millions of Americans of working age who've left the labor force. If. Boy, that's one big word, isn't it? If. My father used to say that if was the biggest small word in the English language. There's a wonderful Yiddish expression that when you translate, it says that if my grandmother had balls, she would have been my grandfather. If. We're being denied the truth by so much of the news media, by the politicians. They're all standing in line to feed at the trough of open borders, of globalism. But what they don't understand is that in the long run, this will impact them as well. They are in a feeding frenzy for wealth. Cheaper labor, lower the costs. In engineering circles, there's a term known as cost out. Cost out means that if you make a product and you find a way to make it cheaper, then you make whatever efforts you can to make whatever product you produce cheaper. You know, use a little bit less metal, a little bit less plastic, make it a little bit smaller, make it a little bit less efficient or a little bit less durable. Doesn't matter. Because if we can, you know, shave a fraction of a penny off the cost of each item and we sell 5 million widgets, then we make more money off of each widget, so it's worth it. So many corporations have a small army of engineers scraping little bits and pieces of metal and plastic off the stuff they make to save that fraction of a penny, to make that product a tiny bit cheaper. And then while we're at it, why do we have Americans sitting there doing that work, and we can bring people in from India who will work for a third the wage of an American? Of course, they also send money out of the economy. India last year got $70 billion in remittances globally, and that's the visible money. They are the country. India is the country that got the greatest amount of remittances wired home by their foreign workers working across the world, including, of course, here in the United States. You know, it's just astonishing. The idea behind the economic stimulus package, Mr. Obama put us into hock for billions to put money into the economy, the theory being that if you pump money into the economy, people will make purchases, it will generate more business. As more business is generated, more people will have money and they will make more purchases and the economy will rise. But remittances go in the opposite direction. Remittances, think of it this way. Imagine during the time of a drought, when water is super expensive, you fill your bathtub, your swimming pool, rather, with lots of water in the evening, thinking, boy, when I get up in the morning and it's starting to get hot and humid, I'm going to jump in the pool for a morning dip. But you leave the drain open inadvertently, and so in the morning you come out and you're greeted by the sight of what? A bone-dry swimming pool because you left the drain open. Economically, folks, the drain for our economy are those remittances leaving the United States. The drain is wide open, okay, because when money moves anywhere, the banks get their cut. Other people get their piece of the action. And that's just fine with the greedy SOBs who don't give a damn about America or Americans, because we are just impediments to their wealth, as I was told by one guy from the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. Secure borders are an impediment to wealth. And I told them that those borders are our first and last line of defense. And it got really ugly. It got really ugly. I mean, look, the stuff that is going on so that politicians can be bribed, because that is exactly what campaign contributions are, is despicable. Civil servants, members of the military, federal agents, police officers, God help you if you take a cup of coffee. Internal investigations will set up a camp outside your front door, and they will scrutinize you every which way. Your doctor should only do such a thorough physical. But when politicians get millions of dollars through campaign contributions, and it flows into the political parties, and both parties are as corrupt as they come, I compare the Democratic and Republican parties with the Medellin and Cali drug cartels. They will literally stop at nothing to control turf. And if all you give a damn about is more money and more money and more money and more power, and you don't care about the impact on your country, then you understand the path that this country is going down right now. The people that have the insatiable appetite for wealth, however, are not unlike a cancer. See, cancer has an insatiable appetite not for wealth but for nutrients. Many cancers actually secrete hormones that cause the body that it's infested to grow blood vessels, which is why bleeding can sometimes be a symptom of cancer. So the tumor just sits there and grows and grows and grows because the blood vessels surround it and bathe it in nutrients, starving off the healthy tissue. And that tumor becomes, in a manner of speaking, the most effective organ in that victim's body until the victim dies, and then the cancer is buried with its victim. Perhaps you might call it poetic justice. I call it a terrible death that's happened to members of my own family. Unfortunately, too many people have seen that happen up close and in person. If we destroy America's economy, if we destroy the middle class, if we destroy the American dream for Americans and we lose our country, it's not as though Canada, Great Britain, or France are waiting in the wings. I got to tell you, folks, I can deal with it. Let someone else deal with the headaches for a while. Let's us go on vacation as Americans. Because America is always there for everybody. We are the world's 911. When there's an earthquake, when there's a tornado, when there's a tsunami, when there's revolution, when there's uprising, we are Johnny on the spot. We are there like no other country. They expect us to be there. So that afterwards, of course, they can complain that we interjected ourselves. Unbelievable. You just can't win. But you see, if America loses its position, and under this administration it certainly is, it's being kicked off the pedestal, apparently by design. Waiting in the wings, it's not France, Germany, England, Canada. Waiting in the wings are ISIS, Russia, Iran, China. What could possibly go wrong? We need to wake up to this. Pardon me. And therein is where my concerns are, what we are not doing to protect America or Americans. Ignoring the findings, recommendations, indeed the warnings of the 9/11 Commission in such a perilous era is suicidal. And yet we're doing just that. This administration in particular is doing just that. But you could look at the prior administration as doing a lot of very bad things in terms of ignoring the significance of our borders and our immigration laws, making a mockery of those laws. And so I've been writing for CapsWeb.org. I've been writing for Front Page Magazine, Front Page Mag. I have an article coming out shortly in The Social Contract. The winter edition is out with my article about sanctuary cities. The spring edition will be out shortly. I kind of borrowed the idea of a title from Donald Trump. Hopefully he won't mind. He wrote a book, very well-read, well-received book, The Art of the Deal. My article is The Art of the Question, not The Art of the Deal. People don't question anything. We have gone from being the most literate nation in the world. If you remember years ago, Life magazine, Look magazine, these were magazines that were all pictures. And they went away because Americans were reading. Americans had a ravenous appetite for written material, not photos. That was seen as superficial. Well, the picture magazines are back, Dancing with the Stars, going full tilt. The hell with reading. We're in a situation now where people tweet and Twitter and do all this other stuff. I'll be honest, I don't do it. I'm a techno dinosaur. I do email. That's about it. So we've gone from being literate and writing letters and wonderful words and communication skills were encouraged. Today we bark at each other with 144 characters. We text each other. Nuts. So people aren't going beyond the headline. If you expect somebody to read more than three or four sentences in an article, all too often you're deceiving yourself. That's one of my problems because my articles for Front Page tend to run 1,500 words. I write for Caps. They demand a slightly smaller format, and I comply with what they want. They're probably right. Because American people want instant everything, instant gratification in particular. Give me the headline. Never mind the details. Too much work here. I got to read. Oh, I can't be bothered. And we're losing our country because nobody understands what's going on because nobody's paying attention. And then we're told, well, this is a matter of political correctness, that we don't use certain words. And I really get pretty upset with that because we're not being politically correct. We're being Orwellian. George Orwell brilliantly said that in a time of universal deceit, telling the truth is a revolutionary act. So now the Library of Congress, and I wrote about it for Front Page Magazine, has acceded to the demands of the students at Dartmouth University. They will no longer have categories of their materials under titles such as illegal immigration or illegal aliens. Now they're going to be called immigrants and God knows what else. We're going to alter the language. Universities, which used to be the centers for debate, discourse. I was going to teach debate on the college level had I not become a federal agent. My degree was in communications, arts, and sciences. Try to have a debate on a university campus where somebody puts in chalk the name of Donald Trump on a wall in chalk. There's demonstrations and people faint. People faint because somebody wrote the name of a candidate for the presidency. This is the madness that we're experiencing. We need safe zones in colleges to protect our children because their ears are so sensitive that if an offensive word is heard, oh, my God, forget about fainting at the sight of blood. These folks are ready to faint or perhaps go to war at the sight of a word they disagree with. Orwell's 1984 was so prophetic. The idea was that if you could eliminate words from the vernacular, you could eliminate the thoughts. by insisting that there's no such thing as an illegal alien, suddenly people are Americans. Hillary Clinton is out there saying it. Oh, these are all Americans. And there's a candidate who wants to separate Americans. They're not Americans, folks. If you're here as an alien, you're an alien. And yet, the game of the politicians, Bernie Sanders, Hillary Clinton, and, you know, I'm registered as a Democrat. It sickens me to hear the two of them running their mouths about immigration. It sickens me to hear the statements that they're making about wage equality and talking about 10-10 an hour. I personally agree with raising minimum wages. And by the way, if you're listening to my program and you disagree with me, we're not enemies, folks. We're Americans. We're entitled to disagree. Let's have the discussion. I'm not always right, and frankly, whoever you are, you're not always right either. And sometimes the best way to come up with the best answers is to have a discussion with someone you vehemently disagree with, because maybe there's a middle ground, or maybe someone really needs to change his or her way of seeing something. It may be me, it may be you. That's why freedom of speech is the First Amendment. There is no democracy possible, or no democratic process possible, if you cannot speak your mind. By the way, the First Amendment also talks about the right to seek redress of grievances and the right for peaceable assemblage. Why on earth did the Founding Fathers talk about the right for peaceable assemblage? I'll tell you why. If you go into a dark room, a closet, and you speak your mind but nobody hears it, it's pointless. The whole idea to speak in your mind is to do so in the presence of other people and have that discussion. And all they said was keep it peaceable. Leave your guns, your clubs, and your knives out of the conversation. That's why freedom of speech has to go with the right of peaceable assemblage. Go to the beach in the dead of winter and there's nobody for 5 miles around and you run your mouth, it doesn't matter what you're saying. To be truly free, you need to be able to do that in a room of people who can hear you. And you should have the absolute right, without equivocation, to speak your mind. Unless you're yelling fire in a crowded theater. Pardon me, that makes sense. Unless you're calling to incite people to riot. That's another issue. But to stand up and take a position, and I don't care what the issue is. I don't care if it's abortion, gay rights, school prayer, immigration, legalizing drugs, which I oppose, but I'm willing to have a debate about it because this is America. You know, maybe instead of having linen sales on Memorial Day weekend, when we remember the ultimate sacrifices of our men and women, our gallant men and women in the armed forces, you know, maybe, just a thought, dawned on me the other day. Instead of a linen sale and a barbecue, maybe we should have a national debate day on Memorial Day to remember that those soldiers died defending our right of freedom of speech and right for peaceable assemblage. That's why the hell we put them in harm's way, isn't it? To protect our Constitution and our way of life. Not to buy pillowcases and towels. The lunacy of our nation and our people astonishes me. The stupidity of the average person who refuses to pick up a book, refuses to dig beyond what they're hearing on some program, and then they spend the rest of the month running around saying, I've heard, and they say. They who? It's infuriating. It's infuriating. Why I welcome these opportunities, whether it's Californians for Population Stabilization or Front Page Magazine or the Social Contract, the fact that they provide me with the opportunities to write my articles, to put my perspectives out there. And I can assure you that my perspectives are based not on some brain spasm I had, but on the fact that I spent 30 years enforcing the immigration laws. My dad was a straight shooter. He was a blue-collar guy. He was a tradesman, a plumber. And in my world, tradesmen are no less valuable than accountants or anybody with a degree. You know, plumbers have a 5-year apprenticeship program. It's no different from going to college, except you work with your hands as well as your mind. You need to use both. And he would always say to me, you know, if I would run my mouth at the dinner table offering opinions that were based on nothing, he'd give me what I call the father look, and he'd say, Mike, empty barrels make a lot of noise. And that was my dad's way of telling me, zip it, because you don't know what in the world you're talking about. I lost him when I was 19 to cancer, in part because he worked in the Navy shipyards. But to this very day, I follow his advice, the advice of my mom. There's a world of difference between being educated, being smart. They were really smart, but they didn't have formal educations. They made certain I went to college. And by not standing up to the people who make those false accusations, this tactic of intimidation, we're losing our country. You're told, well, you're anti-immigrant if you don't accept everybody from everywhere, no matter what kind of criminal history they have or what their ultimate goals might be. Folks, suicide is not an act of compassion. Suicide is stupid. As a nation, we are committing suicide, and we're allowing the politicians to do this to us. And I don't care if you lean to the left, the right, the center, or you lean sideways. We're not taking a suicide pact, you know. We'll leave that for the radical Islamists. And then we need to deal with them, the effective way that we need to deal with them. But, you know, this idea that we are not going to stand up for ourselves and push back when people make these scandalous accusations is nuts. You know, when I was a kid growing up in Brooklyn, if you really had a disagreement with somebody, sometimes words weren't the solution. And my schnoz, my nose is a little bit off kilter because I engaged in more than my fair share of schoolyard fistfights after classes. But we grew up learning how to defend ourselves and learning how to stand our ground and learning to use an expression I don't hear much of anymore, not take guff from anybody. And today we're just so polite. We're so limp-willed. It's got to stop. It's got to stop. And today, you know, we're witnessing, and I want to get into this, because first and foremost, safety first should be the order of the day, and I actually spoke about that when I testified before a congressional hearing. And I said that, you know, we are all raised with that concept of safety first. Whatever we do, we always want to put safety at the beginning. We know how the 9/11 terrorists attacked us. They lied on applications for immigration benefits. They lied on applications for visas. On 9/11, we had 26 visa waiver countries. We're now up to 38 visa waiver countries. There should be no visa waiver countries right now. We're doing this. Our politicians are doing it to placate, to satisfy the people who are bribing them, the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. I've talked about it before, but I feel compelled to talk about it today on this third anniversary of the Boston Marathon terror attack. You know, the 9/11 Commission had a staff. The staff wrote its own report on terrorist travel, and if you listen to what's going on, these people from, I think we're up to 120 countries now that are traveling to Syria, training for battle, fighting on the side of ISIS, going back to their home countries. We saw what happened in Belgium. We've seen what's happened in Paris. We saw what happened in San Bernardino. We've had other terrorist attacks in the United States. Most, thankfully, did not succeed. A couple did. The results were devastating. People died. People were injured. And we keep doing the same things the same way. The 9/11 Commission was convened the way that we commissioned these groups to look at how the two shuttles were destroyed, Challenger and Columbia. The commissions that were put together to look at Challenger and Columbia were done so that we wouldn't make the same mistake again. When an airliner crashes, the FAA comes out, the NTSB, National Transportation Safety Board, comes out. Everybody comes out. Why? They want to know, why did the plane crash? Did the pilot make a mistake? Was there something done that was wrong in the control tower? Was there a mechanical problem? What happened? We don't want another airplane to fall out of the sky and make a smoking hole in the ground and incinerate a bunch of innocent people. Makes sense. That's the reason we had a 9/11 commission. So the commission comes out with its findings, and we ignore all the findings. And the way the lies happen and the way they downplay immigration. When the Zika virus hit the headlines a couple of months ago, I was actually in Wichita, Kansas around that time delivering a couple of speeches. And it was funny, because two or three days earlier, they were talking about the Zika virus, how it's coming from Brazil, It's only borne by mosquitoes. You can't get it in human-to-human contact. That's a lie. I went online. In 2013, the Center for Disease Control said that the Zika virus could be transmitted through sexual contact. The news media never said that. And then it was very funny, because the day that I landed in Wichita, Kansas, there was a news report about some person who had contracted the Zika virus through sexual contact, and the person was in Houston, Texas. So, because I have a twisted sense of humor, I got on stage in Wichita, and I said, look, on the one hand, we're being told you can only get the Zika virus by mosquitoes, and now suddenly the news report is that someone caught it through sexual contact. Well, there's only one obvious conclusion, and because of that obvious conclusion, I'm going to offer a reward to anybody who can get me a copy of the photograph of this individual having sex with a mosquito. Pretty funny. Everybody laughed, but it's not a joke. We're being lied to, because if you start to talk about people transmitting the disease, then the obvious question is, are people entering the United States who perhaps are carrying this disease? And now if people are running our borders and they're not being checked for the disease, are we exposing ourselves to the possibility of tragedies in American families? Because the impact of the Zika virus on women who have children is devastating. Microcephaly, where children are born with very small heads and deformed brains. You don't get better from this. You don't get better from this. And a family that has a child that has serious birth defects, there is no recuperation. For the balance of their lives, the parents of these children are never the same. The child has a life that is not as fulfilling or you know, wonderful as it should be. This isn't like, you know, you have the flu and you get over it. So we should be alarmed at the possibility that American children might wind up with a very serious debilitating birth defect. And what do we need to stop it? What do we need to do to stop it? But you see, if you start to link it to the movement of people, then we're going to be talking about immigration again, and you can't do that. I have sat at congressional hearings, and I've arrested terrorists, by the way, as an immigration agent, and say to a member of Congress, well, if you look at the immigration component to terrorism, and I've had Congress people wave at me and say, wait a minute, Mr. Cutler, there is no link between immigration and terrorism. We're not going to have that conversation. And I recommend them to look at the 9/11 Commission report. It's been quite a while since I did my last hearing, 3 years ago. You got to wonder. You got to wonder. You see, it's frustrating. This is about protecting American lives and the children and our grandchildren and our nation itself. And when you have politicians who are willfully blind, the first step in problem solving is to admit there's a problem. The second step is to figure out how to deal with that problem effectively. If you are willfully blinding yourself to what the problem is, there is no way on God's green earth you're going to find any solutions that are going to work, because you're going to be looking for love in all the wrong places. Let me give you an example before we talk about 9/11. I just want to make this point because I was listening to Obama's State of the Union address this past January. And as the words flowed by me, you know, we've all been in that situation trying to capture the words and so forth. I always recommend going back and reading the actual transcript. Obama talked about wage insurance. Now, I don't know how many of you heard about this, and I had mentioned it in a recent article for Front Page Magazine, wage insurance. And, you know, he said, well, when an American loses his job and goes for training and gets a new job, but the new job doesn't pay as much as his old job, we have to make up the difference, at least for a while, so they can pay their bills. Well, I mean, think about that. You lose your job, you go for training, which should mean you now have more qualifications than you did before, but yet you're going to earn less money. So I started doing a little bit of research the past couple of weeks into this notion of wage insurance. And lo and behold, I find out that it was first suggested by George W. Bush. And there were caveats attached. The only way, according to what he wanted, that you would be eligible for wage insurance, to collect it, is if you were over the age of 50 if you were earning less than $50,000 a year, and this is the real kicker, sit down, put your seatbelt on, and hold on for dear life. You're not going to believe this one. And you lost your job to a foreign worker. And I sat there reading this just a couple days ago, and I said, oh, my God. You see, the real solution to Americans losing their jobs to foreign workers is get rid of the damn foreign workers. That's what the immigration laws were written for. Prior to the Second World War, our immigration laws were enforced primarily by the Labor Department. That was how we built the middle class. You see, we made certain that Americans would not have to compete with foreign workers for a job. Why? Because in this world of poverty, and there's now more than 7 billion inhabitants, more than half of whom live below the poverty line, well below the poverty line, you can find people who will gladly work for a dollar a day and a warm bowl of rice. If we allow America to start to hire those folks, America will become a third world country. We're halfway there now. And so you have Hillary talking about wage equality and 10-10 an hour, and Bernie Sanders talking about wage equality, 10-10 an hour, and I mentioned it a little bit earlier. So now here you have George W. Bush. See, it's both parties. Don't you for a moment give me this nonsense, those damn Democrats, because it's also those damn Republicans. It's the repugnant cans and Democrats, as I call them. They're indistinguishable. They're behind the push. Instead of saying to make sure that Americans don't lose their jobs to foreign workers, we're going to make certain that immigration identifies them and removes them, deports them. We're going to make certain that there's integrity to the visa program, such as the H-1B visa program, so that foreign workers don't come in here and take jobs that Americans are ready, willing, and able to do, which is what the law says. They say we need to modernize the immigration laws. Well, how do you modernize the laws? Let's not bring in manual laborers. Let's bring in high tech. That's modern high tech. So we'll fire all the American computer programmers. We're doing it now. And then we'll complain that we don't have enough programmers. Well, you know, they're right. We don't have enough programmers. Programmers who will work for the dirt wages that an Indian will work for. So you have an American who for years has devoted himself or herself to the computer industry. My late wife, we're coming up on the 30th anniversary, hard to believe, of her passing, was a systems programmer with an MBA in computer science. She was a Phi Beta Kappa graduate. I was very proud of her achievements. Her colleagues, the people that are still doing that job in that industry, are losing their jobs hand over fist to foreign workers who will work for a third of their wages. That's what's happening. So instead of the U.S. government standing with the workers, the U.S. government is standing with the employer, who says, great, cheap labor, cheap labor. But if you destroy America, as I pointed out moments ago, these companies are not going to do well if ISIS takes control, or if Iran takes control, or if China takes control. I mean, understand what we're talking about. Our nation faces an existential threat. If we destroy the middle class, we destroy the heart and soul of America. We're also destroying our own economy. You know, if Donald Trump stopped to think about it, if you look at all those remittances flowing out of the United States and all the Americans who've lost their jobs through no fault of their own, if you could stop that, you could erase the American deficit in short order. We're losing probably $200 to $300 billion a year in remittances alone, and that's the visible money. If you look at the multiplier effect, that more than accounts for the national annual increase in the national debt. Now consider how many Americans have gone from being tax-paying, middle-class consumers with disposable income, and now through no fault of their own because they were fired and can't get jobs in their industries, they wind up on expensive government safety net programs. They no longer not only don't pay taxes, but they're taking money out of the Treasury, and they've lost disposable income, so they can't do anything to contribute to the economy. This is a death spiral. This is a race to the bottom, encouraged, facilitated by our own government. By our own government. And so, you know, if you look at all of that, if you listen to Greenspan talk about American high-tech workers as the privileged elite, and you wonder why Americans are angry, well, that's why they're angry. When you have politicians on both parties saying we need to increase number of H-1B visas, you know, Ted Cruz wants a 500% increase in the number of H-1B visas. Ted Cruz wants to double the number of legal immigrants. And I had someone say, well, you know, he's kind of changed his view. Well, if he has, he needs to come forward and let us know where he stands on this. Because Ted Cruz, on his website, said we need to stop illegal immigration so we can increase legal immigration. Do we need to increase legal immigration? Is there a shortage of people in America today? Think about that one the next time you're stuck in the rush hour. Think about that one the next time you hear some politician in New York or elsewhere talk about congestion pricing or tell you there's a drought. These are some of the issues that, by the way, CAPS put out in its radio ads in California. But now, you know, I really think most importantly, we should look at the national security implications. But you need to understand that the reason we're in this mess is economics. Always follow the money. The greedy bastards that are doing this to us don't care about America or Americans. All they care about is lining their pockets. And, you know, I always make the point that the funeral industry is a multi-billion dollar industry, and no doubt the U.S. Chamber of Commerce is looking to drum up business for the funeral homes and the people that make the coffins and the monuments that are used in the cemeteries. I mean, those are industries. This is blood money, folks. America is bleeding red and green, being facilitated by businesses and in a holy alliance with the politicians. That's why I don't get how everyone talks about this being a conservative issue. This isn't about left or right. This is about right or wrong. But, you know, the 9/11 Commission staff wrote the staff report on terrorist travel. And the very preface, the beginning of the preface of that report, the first word you see after the index says this. This is the 9/11 Commission, the staff. And this was printed by the government printing office. This is an official damn government report. It's not a supermarket tabloid nonsense. This was published by the federal government. Bet you your congressman or congresswoman or senator hasn't even read it. You should challenge them. It is perhaps obvious to state that terrorists cannot plan and carry out attacks in the United States if they are unable to enter the country. Yet prior to September 11, while there were efforts to enhance border security, no agency of the U.S. government thought of border security as a tool in the counterterrorism arsenal. Indeed, even after 19 hijackers demonstrated the relative ease of obtaining a U.S. visa and gaining admission into the United States, border security still is not considered a cornerstone of national security policy. We believe, for reasons that we discuss in the following pages, that it must be made one. So right there, they're telling you that the visas are a problem. And what do? We go from 26 visa waiver countries to 38. And Obama wants to add more. Crazy. Insane. Now, page 47 of that report, about how terrorists embed themselves, hide themselves in plain sight. Once terrorists had entered the United States, their next challenge was to find a way to remain here. Their primary method was immigration fraud. For example, Yusuf and Ajaj concocted bogus political asylum stories when they arrived in the United States. Mahmoud Abu Alima, involved in both the World Trade Center and landmark plots, received temporary residence under the Seasonal Agricultural Worker Program after falsely claiming he picked beans in Florida. Chuck Schumer, ringleader of the eight gangsters, was the architect of that agricultural amnesty program, and he's learned nothing by its failures. Chuck Schumer goes before the cameras a year ago, stomping his feet and demanding that they make a federal crime out of trespassing on landmarks like the World Trade Center or our bridges or the Statue of Liberty. 5 years in jail is appropriate, he said. Because when you trespass, we don't know who you are, we don't know why you're doing it, we don't know what you're up to, you pose a threat. He's right. But when you trespass on America, Schumer says, oh, well, now you've earned a pass to citizenship. The disconnect and the hypocrisy is beyond words. Beyond words. When is trespassing okay? When you trespass on America. if you think it's dangerous for people to trespass on the roof of a building, how about when you trespass inside our borders and we know that ISIS wants to come here to kill us? Page 98, same report. Terrorists in the 1990s, as well as the September 11th hijackers, needed to find a way to stay in or embed themselves in the United States if their operational plans were to come to fruition. As already discussed, this could be accomplished legally by marrying an American citizen, achieving temporary worker status, or applying for asylum after entering. In many cases, the act of filing for an immigration benefit sufficed to permit the alien to remain in the country until the petition was adjudicated. Terrorists were free to conduct surveillance, coordinate operations, obtain and receive funding, go to school and learn English, make contacts in the United States, acquire necessary materials, and execute an attack. There's another part in the 9/11 Commission report that said that to a terrorist, a travel document, a passport, was as important as a weapon. You have the Obama administration doing this DACA program, Deferred Action Childhood Arrival. These can be aliens up to age 31. On Monday, the Supreme Court will be taking up the issue of the DAPA cases, the parents and family members of the DACA kids. You want to talk about an overreach? An overreach? The madness is that there's even a conversation about this stuff. When I was a kid, I don't care if the president was Eisenhower or Kennedy, you knew that the person sitting in the Oval Office was making the best decisions for America and Americans. It has been decades since I've had that same feeling of security by these leaders, so-called. When we're told the solution to foreign workers taking the jobs of hardworking Americans is to give insurance to the American who loses his or her job, my head wants to spin like a top and explode. The solution is to not admit people to work in our country that will displace Americans. The solution is to arrest people who are here illegally. And you know, I disagree with Trump when he said we should keep Muslims out. What we need to do is have interior enforcement. And I wrote an article about this recently for capsweb.org. The key to immigration enforcement isn't the border. You have to accept that the inevitability that aliens will either get past the border patrol or lie to the inspector at an airport or a seaport or land border. You know, the inspector is supposed to conduct that inspection in a minute. In a minute. I know, I did the job for 4 years. You're going to make mistakes. The solution to that mistake is meaningful interior enforcement, and there is none. Any alien who can get past the border is basically home free. You have a better chance of getting a winning lottery ticket than getting arrested by ICE, especially with this administration. And so now the president turns around with all the people concerned about how we can't vet Syrian refugees. And up until now, the answer has been, well, we're scrutinizing them. It takes 18 to 24 months to go over everything that's available, which is very little, by the way, if you watch the hearings that Jeff Sessions and others have conducted in the Senate. And now the president said, oh, we're going to do this in 90 days. Originally, it was going to be a couple thousand. Now we've been told by the administration that 10,000 is not the ceiling but the floor. At least 10,000 refugees are headed this way, but it could be many, 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 many more. And we don't even know the full scope of how many this administration wants to admit. Now, it's not as though there's no other viable choice. Senator Sessions and others have said, look, instead of bringing these people here, this threatens national security. It stresses communities. It puts more people into a labor pool that can't find jobs, more children into schools that are struggling to help the kids meet standards so they can be successful adults when they get out of school. The obvious solution, and it's a lot cheaper and more cost-effective, is to create safe zones in the Middle East, have the refugees go to those safe zones, provide for their care and housing and education and clothing and food, because hopefully, presumably, I mean, it won't happen with this guy in the White House, but the next administration better send ISIS to meet their virgins. Well, once the chaos hopefully ends, these folks are going to want to go back to their home country. You see, the problem is that our politicians from both parties are using every possible excuse to keep aliens in the United States and entice more to come here. You know, the manifest destiny is over. You know, go west, young man. California is heavily populated. We don't have to go west anymore. You know, 100 years ago, 150 years ago, America was this vast continent, or occupied a vast part of the North American continent. And there was lots of need for manual labor. Increasingly, robots are doing the jobs people used to do. Interestingly, the Bush proposal for wage insurance did not cover individuals who lost their jobs to robots or computers. Obama wants to include that. So understand what's happening. We've mechanized everything. You know, if you ever watch the programs, and the only reason I still have TV in my house, I love watching cable, because I watch the Discovery Channel and the Science Channel. If you ever watch How It's Made, look at how cars are made today. There are still people on the assembly line, but fewer and fewer and fewer. More and more jobs, welding and so forth, all being done by robots, painting being done by robots. So there's less and less need for workers and more workers pouring into America. This is not a sustainable situation. So instead of saying the solution to foreign workers taking the jobs of Americans is to get rid of the foreign workers, the solution from both parties is to give insurance to the workers who get screwed, Americans. The government is complicit. They know it's happening, and yet they've been lying for the longest time. Oh, the foreign workers do the jobs Americans won't do. No, they're replacing the Americans. How do we know it? Because they were offering insurance to those who lose their jobs. This is so self-destructive, I don't even know where to begin. And then we get back to the point of how the Tsarnaev family claim political asylum. Political asylum means I can't go home. If you send me home, I'm going to be persecuted or worse. What's worse? Imprisoned, executed, tortured, right? Okay. And by the way, I'm a big fan of political asylum. I've always been. I was named for my grandmother, who was slaughtered in Poland during the Holocaust, along with much of my mother's family. So I'm a fan of helping people that are in that situation. But not when we can't vet these people, not when it poses a threat to the survival of Americans. If a country exists for no other purpose, its primary mission is to protect its own citizens. When we see images of a fire or a car accident or a boat capsizing, and you see this distraught parent racing into that burning building, ignoring the flames and the smoke and the personal danger, and then emerging with their child clutched to their chest, to their bosom, nobody would ever run up to that parent and say, "Why did you pick up your own child first? There's other kids in the building." Yes, I'm sure that if that parent, that person could put the child in someone's arms and run back and save other kids, they would. But our instinct is to save our own first. Countries are supposed to save their own citizens first, but not in America. See, in America, Americans are speed bumps. We're impediments to wealth. Americans are the problem. So we need to bring in more foreign workers, more foreign voters, more foreign anything. And Americans are paying the price. And the politicians and the journalists are out there scratching their heads and saying, "Why are these Americans so damn angry?" You know, Haley Barbour made the statement, the governor, "Why are they so angry?" They're angry because they're not living the good life. The American dream is just that, a dream that's become the unattainable dream. And there are politicians who have the unmitigated chutzpah, as we say in Brooklyn, the nerve, the balls to ask, "Why are Americans angry?" Wherever I go around the country and I meet with law enforcement, that it's always wonderful, and I always feel like I'm with family. Law enforcement is a community. And those who've carried the badge know what that's like. Wherever you go, you're with friends. And I'm hearing one horror story after another, whether it's North Carolina, whether it's Kansas, whether it's Washington, wherever I go, about children addicted to drugs. The drugs are pouring across the country. The drug cartels have set up shop in communities clear across the country. The violence is following them everywhere. And the politicians want to know why the Americans are angry. I've gone before congressional hearings where I've wanted to bring with me three different things and distribute them to the members. Not all the members. There are a few exceptions. My good friend Lou Barletta, the congressman from Pennsylvania, certainly a friend and a true representative, a leader. Jeff Sessions, Chuck Grassley, Congressman Steve King. There are a few. But, boy, you got to look far and wide to find them. But I have often wanted to bring with me dunce caps, straitjackets, and handcuffs and use them appropriately with the members of Congress. You've got to be delusional not to understand the anger of the average American. You have got to be delusional or crazy or a total idiot with a flatline EEG not to see the destruction of America's middle class and what it means for America's long-term survival. If these politicians can't get it, then they need to join other Americans on the unemployment line. We need to kick them in the rear end and send them packing. They need to get the memo. You're either with us or you're against us. And if you're against us, you need to find a different way to make some money. Because sure as hell, you don't belong in government. When a guy like de Blasio can give municipal identity documents to illegal aliens, I mean, you want to talk about an Orwellian term, I could just imagine George Carlin having a field day with Sanctuary City. Sanctuary is a place of comfort and protection. How in the world do you get comfort and protection when you're living among people who snuck into the country for reasons known only to them? Yes, they may just be desperate for a job, that's true, but maybe they committed heinous crimes, maybe they're part of a drug cartel, maybe they're part of a terrorist organization. And in these instances, folks, what we don't know can and will hurt us. So we give them sanctuary. And what do you call what we've given the Americans and the lawful immigrants who live in that community? They're not getting any sanctuary, are they, if they're living among criminals, drug dealers, and so forth? The lunacy has to stop. But, you know, my dad taught me when I was a kid that I would teach people how they should treat me by consistently demonstrating what I'm willing to accept. And he told me, if I am willing to be treated like a doormat, then don't complain when you are. Don't complain when you are. It may take some work, but we've got to get going, folks. When people make the accusation, stand up to them. Stand up to them. Speak your mind. This is America. I had my issues with Ronald Reagan's position on immigration and other issues, but he said that freedom was never more than a generation from extinction. I'm pretty much quoting him. I don't want to get it wrong, but that was the upshot of what he had said. We're losing our freedom, and it's beginning with the control of language. It's straight out of 1984. When the government says the solution to foreign workers displacing Americans is to give insurance to the American worker, you know we are in deep trouble. Please get involved. Please get involved. I am counting on you to get out there and do what you can to get your voices heard by our elected representatives and make sure they actually represent us. You know, this is something that this is a job Americans must do. Please let your friends and neighbors know about my program. Let them know about michaelcutler.net, my website. Please visit capsweb.org regularly because they have new articles up every single day. Front Page Magazine. Do what we can do to try to turn this thing around. And please, folks, get involved because I always like to remind people that democracy is not a spectator sport. I'm looking forward to seeing you again, same time next week, right here on the Michael Cutler Hour. Have a good weekend, everybody. And let's get busy. See you then.